So we're on the line with Sandra Smith, the federal leader of the Marxist-Leninist Party of Canada. And first off, the main question, just to clarify, what separates you from the Communist Party of Canada?
Well, we have different histories. They were founded in 1921, and we were founded in 1970 as part of the whole political formations at that time. And mm-hmm. This question always makes me laugh. There was the other day, Duceppe answered a question about Canadian flags,
mm-hmm.
and he was protesting 100 Canadian flags in the legislature. And he said you could have one flag, and somebody said, what's the difference between 100 Canadian flags and one flag? And he said 99. So the issue is we're two different political parties, and we're both communist, and we both are fighting on the same issues against the anti-social offensive and the neoliberal globalization, against Canada's aggressive foreign policy and what George Bush is up to.
Mm-hmm.
We prefer to emphasize our similarities at this time, and that everyone should vote for alternative candidates.
Mm-hmm. And so in terms of your candidates, then, you have candidates nationally in four provinces, is that correct?
Five provinces. 59 candidates in five provinces, yeah.
Mm-hmm. So there's quite a national appeal to it versus just a single party, versus a single area of the Canada.
Yes. I mean, at this time, we can sustain this many candidates, and as the organization is strengthened, we will have many more. We have a request to be candidates in practically all the provinces, and in future mm-hmm. we will be going in that direction.
So in terms of gaining seats and gaining candidates in each, in many different more ridings, what do you believe is the most important step in gaining a federal seat or gaining more support in certain ridings?
Well, you see, our party is a party with a difference because, first of all, we're an organized force, which means we put all the weight of the party resources behind the ordinary workers, women, and youth, and we seek to empower them to come to power.
Mm-hmm.
And as far as I know, we're the only party which opposes the system of party government and proposes a profound renewal for the democratic process so that Canadians can exercise control over their lives. So we're calling on the workers to become worker politicians, on the youth to give themselves training so that they can build a future for themselves. And so for us, when people want to become candidates, it's a matter of being an organized political force
mm-hmm.
so that they can make headway. And we don't participate just at the time of elections, but 24/7 all year round.
Mm-hmm.
One of the things that... in this election, basically, you know, if you were to ask me what is the main issue in the election,
mm-hmm.
and this issue of issues is one of the most important concerns. The main issue, as far as we're concerned, is that these elections are a fraud. We went into the election without an alternative for anybody. The whole system where you had a party in power and a party in opposition is defunct. And so there's no replacement, so Canadians don't know what to do. The Liberal Party's thoroughly corrupt, and now we're being told that there's an alternative in the Conservatives, in the Harper Conservatives. What do they stand for? Nobody knows. There's no public discourse, and by the way, we congratulate your radio station for participating in letting the electorate have an informed vote, by letting them know where the small parties stand and all this. Because how can you cast? It's fundamental to a democratic process to have an informed vote.
Mm-hmm.
All we have is the disinformation.
Mm-hmm.
So the issue is that we're emphasizing the need for the workers and the women and the youth in this country to be an organized political force. All year round, people fight for the real issues that concern them. Then come elections, you're disempowered completely. You exercise no control over the political process, over the decision-making process. Everything is a secret deal behind your back. And this has to be rectified. And it's a very dangerous situation which we have right now.
How would then a political party as the Marxist-Leninist Party then, you talked about one of your main emphasis is empowering the people and giving, and on your website you talk a lot about the sovereignty of the people. How would a government be able to run a country where they talk about giving more individual power to the people? How does a government fit into this role?
Well, governments, as you know, are formed in many ways. One of them is party governments, mm-hmm. party coalitions, and so on. And you have different systems in different countries, the different forms that this democracy takes. In some cases, you have the electoral system, which is proportional representation, of which there's many different variants, mm-hmm. and they bring party governments to power. There's other systems whereby people select their candidates directly, and where you have the government setting agenda.
Mm-hmm.
And so these things, there should be a full discussion on the questions. Public opinion should be informed and discussed and what's best for Canada. And BC, where you are,
mm-hmm.
as you know, the Citizens' Assembly was elected. They studied. It was ordinary citizens. And this notion that the politicians are there to govern and everyone else is there, you know, brawn and no brain, and you have to entrust your fate to others, we don't agree with that. And the Citizens' Assembly, they did a lot of work. They chose a system. And then it was completely marginalized, so that and then they had a vote on it, and there was no information given to the public. In spite of that, people voted in large numbers for that. It almost made it.
Mm-hmm.
So the role of public opinion and informing, right now we have disinformation as the order of the day. That's wrecking. To disinform means you wreck the form. And so people can't think. And when you can't think, and it's like having bombs thrown at you all the time, as is actually physically done in countries like Iraq or other places. You have chaos, anarchy. People lose even any sense of coherence.
Mm-hmm.
And so it's very, very important, in our opinion, to be an organized political form and address this problem.
Mm-hmm.
Our youth in December held a forum where they took the decision to launch a national inquiry in Canada's political process. We're told that democracy is just a model that can be imposed. Here in Canada, it's the same thing. They're trying to sort out economic, social, cultural, and political problems with a law and order agenda, that is, if you can outlaw them. And this is what's called a crisis. It's just like, say, in Iraq, that you impose a democracy and you can deal with real life, real people, real traditions, real customs by simply imposing a model. We are our own models. We have our whole history. We have our own brains. We can sort these issues out. And so, of course, it's very difficult work because we have only ourselves and the workers and the people to rely on. But it's a very popular program where people want to discuss how do issues pose themselves.
Mm-hmm. And in terms of your first platform, you talk about stop paying the rich, increase funding for social programs. Does that not contradict the giving the sovereignty to the people, where if you increase social funding, that is more a government oriented task for the people? Where the government...
The issue is not the juxtaposition between sovereignty for the people and government. The issue is whose government is it?
Mm-hmm.
Because all societies have, you know, are governed.
Would that not be just a continuation of the parties as it is, where you have a party that you talk about sovereignty for the people, but then it stop paying the rich, then increase funding. You know, increasing funding is a government organization. And at the same time, it's sovereignty of the people versus increased funding is two different juxtaposition, is it not?
No, you're confusing, like, government and if it's government of the people, by the people, of the people, and the decision-making process. All these things are fields in themselves. As far as us having a program, it provides an orientation.
Mm-hmm.
But the fact that the party, has its program, and if you actually read the program, the whole issue is to renew the democratic process so that people can set the agenda themselves and so on. The point of that program is that you can see that there is an alternative.
Mm-hmm.
Like now, everything is just imposed so that, for instance, we're told that we can't have social programs, we can't have all these things because there's not enough money, or that, limited resources and all that. There's no inquiry, like, what happens to the money that we have? Who decides how it's spent? A notion is given that we can have participatory democracy, Well, Canadians all across the country have seen what that means, which is that the powers that be decide the budget, and then you get to decide whether you want to cut hospital beds or cut staff.
Mm-hmm.
And then you can participate in making the decisions. But the issue is who sets the agenda.
And so your main point is you need a democratic renewal, and the fact that you want to put more of the power into the people and have them decide their own agendas.
Precisely that, but at the same time, like, you don't throw the baby out with the bathwater.
Mm-hmm.
Like, we already know that in foreign affairs, we should respect the sovereignty and the way of life, and all people should decide.
Mm-hmm.
And so the question comes that we oppose the use of force in relations between nations.
Mm-hmm.
So we're not going to go backward on these questions.
In terms of giving the people more power themselves, and equal opportunity for Quebec, for non-French Canadians. When you give the power to these people, will there not be these people butting heads in terms of different cultures, different classes? Different races, different cultures. When you have them, how will a decision be made when there's all these different cultures trying to get out for their own interests? But at the same time, everyone's trying to look out for their own interest. How would they be able to come to a conclusion for an entire country?
All right. Well, first of all, I'd like to quibble with this notion of giving power and all this. When it comes to giving and taking, rights belong to people by virtue of being human.
Mm-hmm.
And the problem poses itself of affirming your rights. If you correlate with any issue, like, say, the right to education, the society needs it in order to flourish, in order to humanize itself. Human beings need it in order to flourish and to advance and so on. And so societies are organized how to provide these rights with a guarantee. So they go from lesser to greater. Say if a society starts with very small resources, they may guarantee education, say, to the primary school level. If a society like Canada, with all its resources and in order to reproduce itself, the studies show that students need post-secondary education.
Mm-hmm.
So in order to flourish, then this must be guaranteed and the resources are put at its disposal.
Mm-hmm.
It's a matter of affirmation of your rights. As far as how human beings sort out differences, the issue is that societies have, invented, like in medieval times, you didn't even have the conception of rights. You had the divine right of kings, but even the notion of a right was only conceptualized after. And so then things go from a lesser level to a higher level. But human beings have a striving to empower themselves so that they can control their fate. And ever since primeval society, first you master the forces of nature, and then you create societies, and then you keep putting things in order and so on, and working out the mechanisms to guarantee these things.
My question relies on the fact that if there were more rights, and these citizens are allowed to express their rights in terms of, Aboriginals, would express their right for an Aboriginal education, would they not? Would these cultures not just look out for their number one, which is their culture? Aboriginals would just be, if we have our right, we want our right for education, and that's our own. We'll do our own education, and then French Canadians would do.
No.
Okay, we want French Canadian and English, and BC would want. We just want BC. How would they all be able to come together under this system?
This is why we should have discussions as to how all these issues pose themselves.
Because mm-hmm.
inherent in your conception there is that everyone is just fighting for number one
mm-hmm.
and for themselves. But in all these fields, there's a tremendous amount of experience, of studies, and so on. And the problems don't pose themselves like that. Like, say, for instance, when it comes to education,
mm-hmm.
there's studies which show that if you're able to learn in your own language well, and then you can learn in any language. Here, the education system is so destroyed that nobody learns even in their own language well.
Mm-hmm.
But like here, the problems of minorities and all this is like when you see your way, language is clothing of thought. and your thought and all this is very linked to your culture, with who you are, and you should be able to express yourself. Then learn everyone else's cultures and languages and all this. This is a matter of great excitement. And if the possibility exists, people will learn all the languages and cultures.
Mm-hmm.
Here in Canada, I mean, like, we're told we're a bilingual nation, and we don't even learn each other, you know, English and French
mm-hmm.
properly. And let alone, why we have tremendous opportunity here to have a society where all the cultures of the world create. Why does everyone have to subordinate themselves to what's called English and French cultures,
mm-hmm.
which is a fraud? Because everybody should contribute, can contribute in creating the new Canada, so that everybody's rights are defended, and it would be in everyone's interest how to harmonize individual collective rights with the general interests of the society.
Mm-hmm.
The well-being of the society is the condition for the well-being of all. Like, so long as the First Nations are thoroughly suppressed and kept in poverty and all this,
they will continue to feel that way.
Society.
Mm-hmm.
We would have a pride of place for the people who have been oppressed, because their well-being would be the greatest reflection on what Canada is.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. Definitely. And it's just onto your third platform talks about the renewal of the foreign policy. You touched on it a little bit earlier. And in the platform, it talks about withdrawing immediately from many of the free trade agreements, the North American Free Trade Agreement, the Asia Pacific Agreement. How do you feel Canada would be able to support itself without the trade agreements gaining from and the connections that we gain from these agreements?
No, the issue is not to oppose trade.
Mm-hmm.
The issue is to oppose trade on neoliberal basis, where the so-called monopolies have to be competitive at the expense of the peoples of the entire world.
Okay.
Canada's foreign policy is based on making Canadian companies number one in the world at this time. And this includes the foreign policy, this responsibility to protect and all this. It's a fraud. Because, like, who is it that's starting these civil wars in various countries that then you have to go in and protect and all this? Who decimated Haiti? Not the Haitian people. It's these foreign monopolies and the international lending agencies and banks and all this. And it's not just us fighting for this. It's the peoples of the entire world
mm-hmm.
who need an alternative system. We're not opposed to trade.
Mm-hmm.
Of course, a trading. All nations will trade. Some countries who don't have certain things, the whole world, like, we can have a very rational system. See, at the moment, like, to have one superpower, the way the U.S. is trying to impose itself on the entire world, you cannot have equilibrium in the world based on a unipolar situation. It's like if you can see a seesaw, you can either have equilibrium based on bipolar or multipolar. So there's all kinds of attempts being made right now to stop this aggression from the U.S.
So the emphasis really is not to come out, not to break down trade, but is to make trade fair.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. How would Canada as a nation be able to, under your leadership of the Marxist-Leninist Party, how would Canada be able to further itself in making trade fair in the international marketplace?
Well, one can have, like you see at the moment, things pose themselves like the problem with the slogan, like, say, to have fair trade,
mm-hmm.
is that if you don't recognize that, what is it that's making it unfair? And how do you practically take measures to defend the interests of your own people and your own economy?
Mm-hmm.
Like the way the government of Canada, and it's you know, whether it's the Liberals, the Conservatives, or anything else, they just are interested in the interests of the monopolies.
Mm-hmm.
And so all the deals they cut and all the things that are said to be in the name of prosperity, they're depriving everyone of their livelihood and rights. You look at the situation right across the country in all the sectors of the economy, with the privatization agenda and all this. They just want, they're going back to the days of having slave labor.
Mm-hmm. And so in terms of the fair trade, it's just in Canada, in this global marketplace, would under your system, would definitely just look out for the Canadian workers and making the Canadian companies fair and make their imprint on the global market one that is justified and fair amongst everybody.
No, when it comes to these kinds of issues like the well-being of a country, you have to take into account the well-being of all the countries. So it's, we say fair on the basis of trade on the basis of mutual benefit.
And in terms of mutual trade, though, it's different playing fields. There are problems in terms of trade where there have been some issues, but in terms of making a trade, it's what's benefit. There's bonuses for both countries at times. If some countries need one thing, other countries need another thing. So often, it's the trade might be imbalanced, but in terms of that country, they still gain. How could it be exactly fair when the countries are different sizes, different needs, different desires?
Of course, but a country like Canada also has responsibilities because our standard of living is based on the plunder and exploitation of the resources of the third world. So there's also all kinds of issues which have to be taken into account.
So in terms of Canada, then, in Canada's standard of living, how would it change then in the system of making trade equal opportunity for each?
On the basis of mutual benefit?
On the basis of mutual benefit of both trading partners.
You see, these things can either, they can either be discussed in terms of the theory, and what works in theory works in practice, so you have the principle that guides, and then you have the concrete reality, so you can't really discuss them up in the air. But based on the principle of trade for mutual benefit, if you're working out something for mutual benefit, you look at the interests of the others, they state their interest, you look at your own interests, and then you look as to what would be mutually beneficial. So sometimes you make the compromise, sometimes others, but the issue is, what is your guideline there?
Okay. We are talking right now with Sandra Smith. She is the federal leader of the Marxist-Leninist Party of Canada. And just one final question here before we wrap it up. And in your platforms, you talk about a belief in Canada as being a classless, and the importance of a classless society in Canada. How do you feel that is important for Canadian culture?
Well, these are the issues as to which direction societies go in. And in terms of when you have the developments of societies, that's where they head eventually.
What do you feel a classless society will take away a motivation of workers, whereas some people want to work hard and make money?
No, not at all. These things can be discussed because motivation is also based on the kind of upbringing you have and society you have and all this. But the motivation of human beings is to develop human society, you know, a social and natural environment which is fit for human beings. And you preserve the natural environment, all the animal kingdom, all these things, for purposes of being able to further contribute to the development of society. At the moment, it's generally understood that human beings are using about 10% of their brains, and mostly, and we're going backwards. Even 10% is an exaggeration. So there's tremendous developments, tremendous potential, which can be developed, and society should favor the development of that for the well-being of all.
But in terms of a difference in classes, really talking about the environment of the people and the growing up in this environment, how will that be able to change in the future in this global economy where it's dominated by these major powers and democracies? How could one country in terms of Canada fit in under the system of the Marxist-Leninist Party?
Well, you see, your question just makes no sense because, concretely speaking, we have classes and we have oppressed classes and oppressor classes, and right now, even a lot of people who belong to the capitalist class are getting dispossessed in favor of the monopolies and monopoly rights. So right now we have more and more of a problem of concentration of economic and political power in the hands of fewer and fewer people. And so this problem is affecting everyone. So to right now, we're dealing with what's called that class struggle, and how the people who, the working class and others who have no political power, who have no power of any kind, can exercise control over their lives.
Mm-hmm.
And so that's the way the issue poses itself at this time.
It's more of an emphasis on being able to take control, having control of your own destiny in a way, versus at right now, many people are often oppressed to the fact that they have no control over their destiny.
Exactly. Let's look at these elections. Like, promises are being made, and who knows what these things stand for.
Mm-hmm.
Like, some people say that the problem is to keep the fire to the feet of the liberals and their promises, but we don't know what it is they promise. When they give money to education, like, where does that money actually concretely go? It's going into private investment portfolios, and then it's out of the interest on that, but we have no control over these decisions. So we say that we have to get the power to deprive them of their power to deprive us of our ability to guarantee our rights.
In terms of this election coming up next week, then a vote for the Marxist-Leninist Party of Canada, what would a vote for this party mean on the immediate front?
Well, we're calling, like right now, with this fraud that the conservatives are an alternative to the liberals, we're saying that people should make a break with this. Do not permit this fraud. So vote for the small parties. Vote for us where we are there. Vote for other small parties as a statement.
Mm-hmm.
That we will invent a new system, that one shouldn't be afraid to go into the future, but one should be afraid of this present that exists and the disempowerment of the people. Things are happening over which we exercise no control, and it gives feelings of hopelessness. Powerlessness is a very disabling thing, very humiliating thing.
Mm-hmm.
And when people have no alternative who to vote for, and it's a very serious problem facing the polity. So we're saying to make a statement, to make a break, to keep them out for 5 years. And then together, people will see how to provide the real problems with solutions.